Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some fascinating guests lined up for you. In the first half, we're going to talk to Dana Remedios, and she is a nutritionist, and we're going to learn to let our food be our medicine. And in the second half, we're going to speak to Phil with 36 years recovery, hoping that anyone in need will find recovery too. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
For kids with asthma, more time spent at home and donning masks due to the COVID-19 pandemic may be providing a reprieve from emergency symptoms, new research shows. Boston Children's Hospital's emergency department observed a steep decline in asthma-related emergency visits last spring. That coincided with a surge of coronavirus cases amid a lockdown ordered by Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker on March 24th. Study author Dr. Tregony Simino said the most significant finding was the drastic, sudden drop in emergency visits shortly after schools closed and the stay-at-home order went into effect. She added how this drop was sustained over several months is quite notable. She is an assistant professor of pediatrics at Boston Children's Hospital. The study was published online December 4th in the Annals of the American Thoracic Society. Could a genuine smile be the key to getting a less painful vaccination? Researchers from the University of California at Irvine say yes. That genuine smile, which brings up the corners of the mouth and creates crow's feet around the eyes, can reduce the pain of a needle injection by up to 40% and also blunt a stressful needle-related physiological response by lowering the heart rate, the researchers said. Surprisingly, a grimace also created those same responses. A poker face did not. Researcher Sarah Pressman said when facing distress or pleasure, humans make remarkably similar facial expressions. She added, "We found that these movements, as opposed to a neutral expression, are beneficial in reducing discomfort and stress." The findings were published online in the journal Emotion. The SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes COVID-19, may have arrived in the U.S. by December 2019, even before the first cases were reported in China, according to a new study published last week in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases. The first U.S. cases were identified in January 2020, but blood samples show that some Americans may have been infected before then. The researchers, who work at the Centers for Disease Control, analyzed more than 7,000 blood donations collected by the American Red Cross in 9 states between December 13th and January 17th. Among those, 106 samples tested positive for coronavirus antibodies, with at least some positives in all 9 states. The first cluster of cases was reported in China on December 31st, and the first confirmed COVID-19 case was reported in the U.S. on January 20th, but the virus was likely circulating before then, according to Live Science. An infant diagnosed with COVID-19 showed signs of reversible heart injury and heart failure, according to a new case report. Researchers found the 2-month-old baby experienced heart issues similar to those seen in adults. The infant later recovered and was released with no heart medications. Dr. Madhu Sharma, lead author of the case report, said the presentation and clinical course of this patient mirrors 4 case reports of acute myocardial injury reported in adult patients with COVID-19. The report was published December 2nd in the journal JACC Case Reports.
Thanks, Alan, for the Health First News. We have Dana Remedios with us today. She's a BC-based holistic nutritionist and health coach. She started studying nutrition in 2006 at the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition, and she has been avidly consuming health information and trainings nonstop ever since. She works as a product information specialist for Flora Health and is the creator of Healthy Hormone Method. So welcome, Dana.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good to have you on Health First. So you got to tell me now, before we even begin, what is the Healthy Hormone Method?
Healthy Hormone Method is primarily a food-based and lifestyle-based approach to getting your hormones in balance. So a lot of people aren't aware that the hormones are connected to every other system in the body, the gut, our stress response, all of that is really going to affect our hormones. So it looks at the whole lifestyle and the whole person in order to get the hormones under control.
Hmm. And everybody's stress response is pretty high right now. Do you have some suggestions for alleviating some of that stress or processing it in a healthy way?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that it is something that, well, I think in our society it tends to be a chronic problem anyway, but it's definitely top of mind, and I think that's giving us an opportunity to actually address it. And certainly just our everyday habits and being able to go through life taking proper breaths I think is a simple thing that we can integrate that doesn't require any equipment. It's free. And just learning to stop and breathe on a regular basis. If we find that, you know, we get stressed easily, then we can check in with ourselves maybe 5 times a day, take 5 deep breaths. That's a really simple thing to start to do with your day.
With your mask off, right? Somewhere where you can have your mask off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think the lack of oxygen and the having your face covered is a stressor in itself. And it limits us to that clavicle kind of breathing or that just survival kind of breathing. So, really, really important to stop and breathe.
Well, it's really interesting what was just mentioned a few minutes ago, that having a true smile that lifts the corners of the mouth can actually reduce pain if you're getting an injection or something. And it's true that not seeing each other smile because we're wearing the mask can have an effect on, you know, others around us. So letting them know that we're smiling behind our mask by smiling with our eyes and other types of things that we can do can help to just bring down the overall stress in the community, I think, when we're out.
I think so. So sparkle your eyes at everybody over your little mask. What other ways can we keep the nutrition high to serve our bodies the best through this season?
That's a great question. So one of the things that we want to focus on is eating the nutritious things first, because a lot of people do reach for comfort food when they're feeling stressed out, and that's natural and that's normal. If you make sure that you're taking care of your nutrient needs by eating nutrient-dense foods and not so much the filler foods first, then you might find that that is one of the most helpful things that you can do. So whole foods, of course. Traditionally prepared foods tend to be more nutritious. Fresh, like local foods tends to be more nutritious, and organic foods tend to be more nutritious choices as well. So those are all things that we can do. In terms of our, nutrition and what that affects, it can affect all kinds of different processes in the body, from our immunity to whether or not we have a more balanced stress response, because a lot of the nutrients, such as the minerals that we bring into our diet, can really help us to respond better. They're very nourishing to the adrenal glands. B vitamins are very nourishing to the adrenal glands. So what we want to do in terms of minerals, and that is, again, look for your organic foods. Also look for things like broths that can bring a lot of minerals into your life, and those are very nourishing as well. So you can make those at home, and that would be a good way to get some of those minerals into your life, and that can help to really help your body to nourish the adrenal glands and bring down the stress response and support your immunity.
So the slower cooking, like the boiling up carcasses of bones, either chicken or beef bones, to make your soups and things like that, is what you're suggesting to get that mineral base and to get the protein and collagen?
Yeah, that can be really good for people that do incorporate more animal foods. They should source some, good quality. Hopefully they can find something that's maybe local, pasture raised, and that kind of thing. You can also, if you're more of a plant-based eater, you can slip seaweeds into your broths and stuff for additional minerals. Anyone can do that when they're cooking up veggies or, beans or meats. You can slip some algae, some seaweeds, things like kombu, into your boiling water, and that's a good way to get some extra minerals in there as well.
With the stresses so high, would you suggest ways of creating more of a tonic to keep bathing the system in over top of your foods, just because our nutrient needs are much higher in stressful situations?
Yeah, so actually that's a very good point. A lot of people aren't aware of how important it is to be in a relaxed state to be able to access the nutrients in our foods. When we're feeling stressed, it does put us into that fight or flight response, or what we might refer to as a sympathetic response, which is when our body is stressed out. And that is great if we need to run away, but it's not great if we need to rest and digest. It limits the amount of digestive power that we have, which is one of the reasons why a liquid at that time, such as a soup or such as a liquid tonic is actually one of the best ways to get your nutrients because it's easier for your body to digest, which it's not able to do very easily if you're stressed out. So one of the things you can do is, take those few deep breaths before you eat. The other one would be to have your, especially your minerals, in a liquid form, or any nutrient really that you're trying to get in a liquid form. It's going to be easier. So calcium, magnesium, and iron are some of the harder things for our body to get out of our foods when we are low in stomach acid, which we might end up being low in stomach acid if we're in a stressed state because we're not going to be producing it as well. So I do like to usually suggest to people that they get their minerals, especially hard to digest ones like iron or sometimes calcium and magnesium, in a liquid format.
And how much calcium or iron would we know if we're kind of deficient in it, or if our diet isn't enough? Would we start to have some symptoms? Say, let's say iron deficiency. It's a very common mineral, but it a lot of people are deficient. What would you notice?
That's a great question. So, unfortunately, going to the doctor and getting checked isn't necessarily going to be a really clear way to know if you're low or not, because it won't identify that until you're pretty advanced and potentially even anemic in the case of iron. So, or potentially having, bone mineral problems in the case of other minerals. So unfortunately, it's up to us, to not just wait and rely on that, but to look for other signs. And I actually really like that actually puts us in the driver's seat, but we don't always know what signs to look for. So some of the signs to look for is, for example, if you have cold hands or feet a lot of the time, then maybe that could be a sign that you're low in iron. Another sign could be dry skin or dry hair, even dry nails. If they're chipping or if your hair is actually falling out, that could be a sign of low iron. These can all happen well before you're in the anemia stage. And just feeling tired, run down, catching everything that goes around and having bad immunity, as well as maybe having a pale complexion, or, actually poor concentration and an inability to concentrate and focus can also be because you've got low iron levels.
Now, is it hard for some people to pick up iron? And what are some good forms of iron that make it really easy to assimilate?
Some people have difficulty, again, because they don't make enough stomach acid, either because they're stressed out or they've just got hypochloridia. And a lot of people run through their iron very quickly. Either they have, a lot of activity in their life, which makes them run through their iron very quickly if they're very active, or if maybe they have a heavy period or something, they might need more iron. So I do usually recommend ferrous gluconate. Ferrous forms of iron don't need the additional vitamin C. That's a really good way to get an iron that's going to be easily absorbed. Usually a liquid form. My favorites are the Floravit, which is a vegan, gluten-free liquid. That's one of my favorites. I'm always paying attention to the real, like, cutting-edge science with iron, and I think there's some really interesting things in the works right now that we've never seen in the world of iron that they're not quite on the market yet, but they might be making their way from clinical studies to the public in the next little while, and that's really important because it is the biggest deficiency worldwide in terms of nutrients. So I think that one, anything in a liquid form is usually going to be highly available, though.
So there's more iron deficiency than any other mineral deficiency in the world.
That's correct, yeah.
Wow, and that's a big thought.
Yeah, everyone is at risk. It's everywhere in the world. It's women and men, but it's also toddlers are at very high risk, and pregnant women are at very high risk as well. And seniors are another group because oftentimes they do have that lower stomach acid, and maybe they're not eating as much red meat, potentially even in a
Dana, we're going to have to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about using food as our medicine.